papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis of what's going on in the news media, and hopefully some insight from your panel here. My name is Rex Smith. I'm formerly editor of the Times Union, now publishing the Upstate American on Substack. And I am here with my colleagues who are such good folks around the table. You know, actually, go ahead and tell us.
Hey, I'm Judy Patrick, and I worked in journalism for many, many decades and discouraged but determined to be aggressive when it comes to fighting for local media and for national media. We got to stand up. We got to talk about these issues.
All right. All right. Judy is the former editor of the Gazette in Schenectady. Barbara?
Hi. I agree with you, Judy. This is Barbara Lombardo, former executive editor of the Saratogian and The Record, and currently an on vacation adjunct at UAlbany.
On vacation, not on vacation, stepping in from the newsroom.
Yes.
Ian Pickus.
Got my new headshots this week here at the station, and
no.
I definitely made the right choice by going into radio.
Well, anyway, we are the panel to share some thoughts with you about what's going on in a very tough time in America. By the way, I want to read a note from a listener in Kingston. Elizabeth writes to say, first, I love your program and just wish it were extended to an hour. Okay, thank you very much. I am one of those who canceled her subscription to the Washington Post after the Bezos changed his op-ed page policy. I understand the concern that thoughtful, hardworking journalists on the news side of the paper might suffer from this exodus, but as one of you noted, it remains to be seen whether or not Bezos will next put restrictions on news reporting. I don't want to wait for that. For me, Elizabeth writes, opinion pieces often help me understand nuances in the news. I tend to read the news, then go to opinion pieces that analyze what's going on, and I believe the two ways of presenting current events are intimately related, because Bezos is restricting opinion to that of his own. This aspect of the paper is no longer of use to me. Well, thank you.
That is well said.
Yeah.
Although I have retained my subscription to the Washington Post for the time being.
You know, actually, the better opinion sections, the big, wealthy opinion sections actually have reporting. Consider, I think one of the most significant pieces published lately was Nick Kristof's opinion piece in the New York Times, where he documented exactly who is dying by name as a result of the USAID shutdowns.
I actually saved that article to show my class when we get back into the session next week. And one of the things that we do in class is look at a photograph that was taken in 1994 in Sudan that won the Pulitzer Prize. It's a starving child where there's a vulture in the background.
Yes.
And so things were terrible in Sudan then, and they are terrible in Sudan now. Nick Kristof, if I can give a plug for the Times, he's one of my personal heroes because his commentary is not just opinion. It's never name-calling. It's full of fact and full of real people. His
journalism
makes it is reporting with a point of view and usually with a clear direction of what action should be taken to fix the situation. Thank you for mentioning that.
Mm-hmm. It's important. I mean, opinion is hard to do really well. I mean, I write opinion now, but I'm using other people's reporting. I'm not doing any reporting myself. And I feel sometimes guilty about that. I attribute the reporting, but still, to do reported opinion pieces is harder work than people think. And it is different, by the way, from talk radio, which is just people ranting. It's different from a lot of the opinion stuff on cable shows. It's really useful. So when Bezos restricts that in the Washington Post to only his point of view, people are left much poorer.
It's a tough one because you want the Washington Post news desk to be as robust as it has been and as vital as it has been. But this is obviously a new era of this ownership. I mean, he has approached this in a totally different way of late. As for opinion pieces, the thing that haunts me thinking about it is nobody has 156 good ideas in a year.
156.
know, three columns a week is pretty tough.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm reading some people's Substacks who write five times a week, which is astounding. And I think you're exactly right. So there's a lot of repetition there, right?
Although in this news environment, there is a lot out there to feed on.
There is a lot. And sometimes just determining what's real is tough. Ian, I wanted you to share with our listeners something you were explaining to us just before we turned the microphone on about the difficulty of reporting what's going on in Trump's America.
Well, you know, of late, there have been some tips that came into the newsroom in different areas of the coverage area, which, you know, for listeners is parts of four states. And I sent a reporter on a wild goose chase about a reported ICE raid in a suburb of Albany. By the time we get there, you know, sort of empty-handed. But it was a different story the other day in Berkshire County, where multiple reports of ICE sightings came in one afternoon. And it reminded me to say to our reporters on our daily meeting that it's really hard to pin these things down. And I would always rather be second and correct rather than run with a source's photo and get it wrong. However, the reporting has gotten pretty difficult. And as we speak, we haven't finalized our reporting on this particular subject yet. But it's almost like what a police detective has to do. You're working backwards to try to piece together a timeline of what happened. And so, you know, we did our due diligence and asked the local district attorney to confirm the sightings, and their answer was that they didn't know anything about it. A member of the state government called us to ask for more information about what was going on. And our colleagues at the Berkshire Eagle were able to speak with a local defense attorney who may be hired by one of the people who allegedly was rounded up. So you're very much working backwards right now. And for these, you know, apparent incidents that took place in broad daylight, for its part, ICE said what they always say, which is, we don't comment on any actions or investigations. Thanks for reaching out. So it's made it pretty tough to know what's going on. And that runs counter to a lot of law enforcement coverage, which is, hey, we're doing a perp walk at 11 a.m. Wednesday, and you might want to be there with your camera.
Right. Oftentimes, law enforcement agencies really want your coverage. They want to show people that they are fighting crime, that they're doing their jobs. Sheriffs need to get elected. Mayors like it when police are active. And you would think that that would be the case also, but maybe it has to do with the fact that ICE operating in a blue state, Massachusetts, maybe they don't want to draw attention to themselves.
You know, ICE has historically been very reticent to talk to the press. I'm going back 10, 15, 20 years, I can remember knocking on the door of their facility over on Route 7, I think, and nobody being there. But this idea of chasing the actual impact of what's happening at the federal level, at the local level, the fact that it's taking you so much time, it's depressing. The fact that they're not being transparent is just plain wrong. But I think going forward, the local media chasing these stories is what is going to be so, so, so important, from the federal leases that get cut and the offices that get shut down to the, you know, the farmers that lose their subsidy income. All of those stories need to be told, and they are local stories, and they will bubble up. So you've heard about a potential ICE raid in Berkshire County. How many other ICE raids in this region have there been that we don't know about because no one's out there looking listening?
That's why the news is really grassroots, bottom up, and that every citizen, every person, hopefully with a cell phone that has video, everyone is a reporter. And that's how we hear the news. I remember, you know, for many years, people would know things that are going on in the community that our staff at the paper, you know, didn't know about. And they'd say, well, why didn't you cover so-and-so? Why didn't you report whatever it was? And I'd say, well, this is how we find out about it. We don't know everything. People come to us. That's how we get the news. And that's how people have to have that sensibility to report, even if they're not sure. So I'm really heartened that people were contacting the radio station, Ian, to let them know that they saw something and that something needs to be followed up. And then we have the responsibility in the media to chase it down.
Do you think that maybe if you were editing a newspaper now, understanding that print is the secondary channel for news organizations, even those that are called newspapers, do you think you'd be maybe trying to solicit news tips. When I was the editor of the Record 30 years ago, we offered people $5 for a news tip that ended up as a story, and somehow that was illegal, I believe. I was cautioned that I wasn't supposed to be doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, we're not supposed to be buying the story.
Buying the story, that's what it was. Maybe it was just unethical.
Did it work?
Only twice.
So you see places like the Washington Post reporters say, are you one of the federal workers who've been affected by the cutbacks? DM me. Mm-hmm. And so you are seeing that, but I'm also seeing the local papers opening the door, like even Ian talking about it now, will make people aware that, oh, if they see something, maybe they should reach out to news at WAMC.org.
If you see something, say something. Yeah.
And to a reporter, which is how you're going to really get the full information about what's happening. I wish ICE was more forthcoming. Even the immigration legal system is hard to navigate. It's almost impossible unless you have a defense attorney who's willing to tell you what's or clue you in about what's going on. I almost wish that, you know, some of these local papers would have dedicated reporters assigned to finding out what's happening at the local level and writing those stories on a continuing basis, because I think people are interested. People who are in favor of these cuts and people who are against them are going to want to know how this is impacting how they live their lives.
And, you know, having a presence and a personality, so quality of the headshot aside, I wouldn't worry about that at all, that people need to be able to connect with the people who are in the media is part of trusting them. So hearing a voice that they recognize, maybe seeing a face that they recognize, and Judy, in your experience with all the newspapers that you've been dealing with statewide, my experience with the disappearing, the Saratogian is still published 7 days a week in print and is online every day and updates every day, but there is no physical presence in Saratoga Springs. There's reporters, a couple of reporters working out of this, but I don't know where they're working from, or you can't walk into a building, you can't call a local number and say, I'm going to stop by to meet with you. I think that's a problem with getting these kind of stories out.
Hmm. And I could just spotlight a couple of my colleagues on the staff who have really worked overtime to localize the story of the Trump administration cuts. We had in the Pioneer Valley in Massachusetts, James Polyoligopoulos, who spent a day with a farmer in Montague who had a line of funding they were counting on frozen with very little information. And that's, you know, literally your backyard. And then also Aaron Shell Levine in the Saratoga area, sitting down with USDA employees who worked on food security programs that they were now running the risk of needing because of the sudden firings. And I think that's when you take a story like the Trump administration, which is opaque and big and national, and you can find those people in the backyard to say, hey, this is how it's affecting me. That's what resonates more than whatever the latest soundbite is.
It's exactly what Rex is saying. Nick Kristof was doing in Sudan is what you're doing locally.
I think that's actually a great opportunity for journalism. And I would suggest that this ought to be run under a banner, reports from Trump's America. Every day have something that is making it clear how ordinary folks are being affected by things, whether it's people paying more than they expected to be paying for their groceries, since people voted to get lower egg prices, it seems, in November, whether it's folks unable to buy homes because of interest rates, whatever the effect is, people losing their jobs, services not being available because of cutbacks at Social Security offices and so on. I think we need to really be on top of that. Not that the big, broad stories aren't terribly important. We got an email from one of our listeners saying that we really need to devote a whole program, he said, to the assault on the constitutional separation of powers that was represented by President Trump going to the Department of Justice and attacking the news media for illegal behavior. He said to the Justice Department, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and MSDNC, which is what he calls MSNBC, and the fake news, CNN, ABC, CBS, and ABC, they'll write whatever they say, totally illegal what they do. And then he said, I just hope you can all watch for it, but it's totally illegal, really corrupt. So the president is basically saying to the Department of Justice, you need to go after the news media. And since we know justice is entirely now under his control, the independence that justice used to have is gone. That is a huge story. And as this listener, Ken, suggests, this, he says, is clear evidence of an effort by the executive branch to usurp the authority and responsibility of the legislative branch. And it ought to be the singular focus of our next program. That's big. But the difficulty is we as local journalists can't just keep thumping the tub about what's going on in Washington.
No, but we have to keep saying what's happening because the media really are in danger. Trump is still claiming loudly that there was a stolen election.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely an oh my God moment for me. And in thinking about what can we do about that, I think one of the things I see out there is still people don't understand why the press is important and why telling the truth is important. He has done, Donald Trump has done such a great job of demonizing us and having people lose trust in us. And again, I think at the local level is one of the ways we can build that trust back up. But you do get attacked as well. I mean, I think local reporters, local photojournalists, local editors are getting calls from angry Trump supporters complaining about coverage. Maybe they're getting angry emails from people on the left as well. But we have to speak up. And I think these are kinds of things that can happen on the opinion pages. And that's why opinion pages remain important. You can do the straight and narrow news reporting, but we as industry veterans, I guess, we need to be out there front and center and be willing to say, this is wrong to say this. We are not illegal. This is so important to our democracy. We're not going to turn away. We need to stand up. The reporters who are out there actively doing the work, they need our support, and we need to be there for them.
It really disturbed me that in the story that I read about the latest, loudest attacks on the media, that there was a line in there where CNN and MSNBC both declined to comment. And to me, silence is not golden. They should have a prepared statement to make every time there is some sort that doesn't sound like they're whining, but declaring the importance of a free and fair and accurate news media, and that we're trying to tell, that we're telling the truth, and that they need to use their pulpit to make sure the public understands how important the media are.
Yeah, maybe a designated person. I mean, Jake Tapper can say all the stuff he wants, but people will see that through, oh, he's biased. Well, have CNN designate somebody, a public ombudsman, to go out there and fight for the freedom of the press.
Yeah, if they believe in doing it and they're not, you know, bending a knee.
The difficulty, I think, for the reporters who are in the midst of all of this, the White House press corps, is how can they stand up for their excluded or targeted colleagues if they want to be heard, if they want to do their jobs? If the White House press secretary won't call on you at a briefing and instead goes to one of the friendlies, one of the folks from one of the right-wing outlets, instead of calling on, say, the New York Times, if the reporters don't stand up for their colleagues who are being excluded, such as the Associated Press, they're not really doing the function they need to. But if they do, they're targeted by a White House that seems to have no shame for attacking the free press. It's a really difficult situation to be a reporter in such a hothouse and trying to do your job when doing so puts you at risk of being unable to do your job.
Yes, I agree that that is a terrible conundrum. But I try to think of if I was in the future and things have continued to go downhill now, if I was thinking back, what would I have wished I had done? And I can't imagine saying, oh, I wished I'd been more silent. I wished I'd been more cooperative. I would have said, I wished I'd spoken up more.
Well, the White House, they're getting pushed around successfully a lot. But I think the onus is on the editors back at the stations or back at the newspapers, because that's what I would have done back in the day. Mm-hmm. You don't expect the reporter to fight that battle. You expect the producer, the publisher, the editor to pick up the phone and make the call and say, this isn't right. And I don't know if that's happening. I don't see any sign that it is.
And let us just not forget that, quite simply, the news media being attacked by Trump in that speech are covered by the exact same protection that allows Trump to make that speech. So I would just point to that.
Well put. Absolutely. It is the freedom of speech and of all of Trump's supporters to say whatever they want. And the difficulty that reporters face, actually, I saw Jonathan Carl, the ABC News correspondent, quoted as saying very clearly, and we've heard this before, most reporters want to cover the news, not be the news. You just want to do your job. You don't want to pick fights.
But it's too late for that. I totally get that. We've been trained, and we do believe, don't be the news, but we are the news.
In the Trump administration, we are a big part of every press conference they have. And oftentimes, again, we don't want to be the news, and so those stories get downplayed. there were a lot of stories coming out of that Department of Justice speech, and I don't believe the newspaper attack or the media attack was the primary story, and it did get some coverage, but the fact is there was so much out of that. I mean, there's so much retribution, revenge, attacks on everyone, that the media attack probably was second or third on the list of stories to cover that day.
Now, let's note two problems. First, you can't report what you don't know. You don't know what you're missing, I guess. For example, so far there have been 800 layoffs at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which is really fundamental to your weather reports, probably 1,000 more layoffs to come. And one of the effects, which I believe it was reported here on WAMC, is that there will be fewer weather balloons rising in this area, right?
Yeah.
So our forecasts will probably be affected, but we won't know why our forecasts are not as effective as they used to be. Unless we just repeat over and over, if a meteorologist says, sorry, folks, I don't really know about this because I can't see things that I might have been able to see when we used to be able to afford to put up two balloons a day instead of just one.
I wonder if there's more that we can do in the media by using Congress as a source and holding the Congress members' feet to the fire, or if they're trying to do something good, like holding hearings that might not be official hearings, whatever they're trying to do, or asking, what the heck are you doing, that covering them more loudly, more regularly, and asking them, because they're the ones who have the power to do something, I think, right?
How would you do that? I mean, Ian's been trying to interview Elise Stefanik for years now.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get a farewell interview.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you've only got a week or two.
Don't count on it.
But there are Democratic Congress people who are trying to hold, not trying, successfully holding town meetings in Republican territories.
Yeah. Are you covering those town meetings, and how much of a challenge is that? Because they can be so raucous.
Yeah, we were at one of the local town halls by Congressman Paul Tonko, and, you know, he's a Democrat from the Capital Region. He's known as a mild-mannered lawmaker, and it did. It got pretty wild. And I think the Republicans have been told, don't hold town halls, more or less, right now. So there's going to be some pent-up anger out there in the hinterlands for any member who does this. And, you know, our experience covering town halls is that most of the time, people are pretty well behaved in the town hall, and that, you know, there should be some back and forth with the member. I actually give them a lot of credit for standing up and doing it, because some of them don't do it at all.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And it's not easy, even if you're Paul Tonko going into what might be a friendly audience somewhat. It's really hard to deal with all the attacks. People are generally not supportive of public officials.
So we've learned that most people don't even know who their congressperson is. So a wide-ranging entity, media entity like WAMC could be telling people, if you live in the whatever part of the Hudson Valley or whatever part of the North Country or Massachusetts, Connecticut, who your person is and what they're doing.
Yeah, if you can figure out the boundaries. I mean, I think we all have our own trouble. Mine has been, I've been gerrymandered through three districts over the last few years. I was going to say the second issue that I think we have to contend with as journalists, in addition to not knowing what we don't know, is just the general inability of people to pay attention to the news, or inability of us to reach so many people. You know, one of the reasons that a lot of what's going on in Washington is happening is because people don't pay attention to what's really in the news. The folks listening to us are issue-oriented people. The typical public radio audience is a pretty sophisticated consumer. And we have to, therefore, I think, double down on the ways to reach people that we're not really good at, such as TikTok or Instagram, other ways like that we can actually reach people.
Right. We have to adapt. That's on us. We need to do more than just write words on paper or write words and throw them up on the web. We need audio. We need podcasts. We need to do double time and tell the stories in ways that people will absorb. You know, for a long time, I thought, we write the stories, we can't read them to you. But now, over time, I've come to appreciate the fact that it's on us to deliver the news in a way that people will consume. And you know what? Cover more news that they want to hear, too. You know, the right-wing media does that a lot. There are lessons to be learned from them.
Well, but what you're talking about, though, what people want to hear is sensational stuff. You know, that's why we hear so much about the gender wars, or even the immigration debate was so blown out of proportion over the years, I would say. but it's hard to deal with these issues on a substantive basis when they've been so sensationalized by the right.
Right. In fact, they've ginned up what people really care about. So what we really need to delve down into what people really do care about. You know, they care about cats. They care about, you know, their community, their neighborhood. I think they care about being good neighbors. And so I think tapping into those kind of personal stories and making them relevant to the issues at hand is one way we can forge ahead.
The Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, he who used to be a weekend anchor on Fox, he makes such a big deal out of trans troops, which represent 2,400 people in the American military. That's 0.2% of the active duty military. But the amount of breath that he talks about in this way is so annoying, so frustrating, so
dehumanizing, cruel, hateful, needless.
All of that. All right. Well, there we go, folks. We've categorized a lot of the problems that are facing contemporary journalists.
And go out there, Ian, and cover these stories, will you?
We have a great team here at WAMC.
And
my advice for these times to everyone on the staff has been just keep doing it.
Keep at it. You bet.
And send tips to Ian.
Absolutely. Thanks, folks, for listening. I'm Rex Smith here with Ian Pickus, Barbara Lombardo, and Judy Patrick, with gratitude to our producer, Dave Gustina. And thanks to you for joining us. We hope to see you again next week on The Media Project.
Newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's onk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspaper men are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally...
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.